Hey, sis, it's your brother.
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good. Happy belated Thanksgiving.
And to you. So let's start this off with our feelings of gratitude. What are you thankful for?
Well, I'm thankful, I guess, in a larger and serious sense. I'm thankful that my job has, I wouldn't say been uninfluenced by the pandemic, but you know, still working and plugging along where I know a lot of people aren't. And I guess the other thing I should be thankful for is that there was no awkward or horrible Thanksgiving because and both our parents are dead. So, you know, I guess in a roundabout way, that was something that we were saved from this year. How about you?
Same. I think we talked about a little bit that, yeah, I'm definitely very thankful that both our parents are dead and not trying to live through this pandemic and all the rest of the unease and uncertainty and not being able to see us.
Yeah,
thankful for that. No more awkward Thanksgiving. Maybe we'll get into the whole gizzards game we used to play with the cousins at some point. Like, no gizzards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. And would have been a good one for that this year. Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, I avoided an awkward post-election dinner with my in-laws, which was pretty cool. I'm also extremely thankful to be employed, like you, with health insurance and to be doing work that has meaning right now. So yeah, pretty happy about that, I would have to say. I'm also thankful for Wawa being open pretty much all the time, because that was what we did for our Thanksgiving dinner. And it was pretty awesome. I was looking forward to it all week. You know, I love to cook and entertain, which I, you know, cooking a lot, but not entertaining lately. So I'm like, if we're not doing it, we're not doing it at all. So we got our sandwiches, sat out in the back deck in the weirdly warm weather and just hung out with the dog. It was really nice.
Oh, well played. I know in the past that had been a threat for any food critics in your household that, you know, you were perfectly content to go get a Jersey Mike's turkey sub and call it good on Thanksgiving. So that, I'm glad you did that. And it really was nice not to have, there was no pressure to do anything, which I think was kind of a bonus.
Yeah, it was. I was talking to my neighbors over the fence and they were actually like, I wonder if this is going to change things for some people. I'm like, it should. Like, people who really, you know, don't appreciate Thanksgiving or have a really hard time with their families. Like, I think one of the greatest things that sort of like worked out for me is that we didn't always have traditional holidays. You know, you and I, like, we've talked about Army of Darkness as like a classic Christmas movie to me because of that. Like, you can go to a Chinese restaurant for Christmas. You can go anywhere. You can, you know, go do it with your friends. You can take turns seeing people and just being trapped into, you know, well, we've done this every year forever. Nobody enjoys it, but we have to do it again. Like, not so.
Yeah. When you're raised by wolves, you're not beholden to any kind of, you know, human or Western civilization based holiday traditions. I've definitely tried to pass that on with my kids too, especially the older two that, you know, this is your a long weekend off for you. If you don't feel, I never want to sound like mom, like, oh, don't worry about me. I'll just soldier on here by myself. I'm always hyper aware that I never want to do that, because I just remember you and I wanted to go to the movies or watch a movie or hang out with friends. There were some perfunctory family obligations, but we didn't want to be beholden to, you know, sitting in a sweater vest for an extended dinner, or, you know, there's a lot of things that we didn't want to be forced to do because we've always done it that way and we never had to, which was nice.
Just watching people like get on each other's nerves as like time goes by, like, and just waiting like for this to get bad enough that we can just leave because no one's going to notice, or like
Well, especially when we got older, we were no longer running the gauntlet of what kind of condition dad was going to be in to drive us home.
Yeah. Yeah. How
and,
long
you know,
watching him drink coffee, like, no one else is here.
Yes. And kudos to Aunt Mary, who I think managed to land that plane every year by making the switch to coffee and making the that next bottle of wine harder to find. So
oh, I'm so happy for a bad memory too. I'm thankful for that as well, I would say.
Oh, good. Yeah. 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 So this was a refreshing change.
Absolutely. So I know we haven't talked a little bit, but I finished up Hawktober, which was a month of doing hockey prompts, which was super fun. And it's kind of got me on a productive roll. It was a prompt from another artist that I met through Twitter. And it was just, you know, a hockey prompt every day. I didn't do Inktober. I think your middle daughter expressed or explained to you what was going on with that, which I thought was hilarious. That she was like
standing up for the artists. Yeah. This is intellectual property. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for her. So, yeah, so I did Hawktober instead of Inktober. And, you know, it's not all great pieces of art, but it was really cool to kind of set those parameters and just bang out, you know, whether it's a joke that only makes me laugh. I actually found a couple other people seem to like some of the dumb stuff I was doing. So that was really
cool. Seen the responses on Twitter. They went over really well.
Yeah, I know. I'm not the only weirdo out there. So, no, it was really fun. And I like the
last time we... Oh, last time we talked on the phone, we talked about that you do have a really distinct style, and is especially for the hockey ones that you could definitely pick a Celia block print out of a lineup. And nice. I don't know, they're just really appealing images, and it's whether it's jokey or something really serious with some commentary to it. I really enjoyed seeing them.
That's awesome. I'm really glad. Yeah, no, I'm really glad and I'm happy to hear that. So keeping it going, doing some other series. I always think in series when I think about the prints. So now that I'm slowing down a little bit, that I'm not trying to produce, you know, every single day, I'm doing some more multicolored prints, but I'm still going with that kind of zoomed in cropped style because it's really working for me. I find it really interesting compositionally. So more to come on that. Maybe you'll see that on our website as we get that up and running too. So from that, I guess we could talk about what's going on in hockey. A lot of stuff. One thing that happened, I think we were talking about it when we were doing our little like pre-show. Bobby Orr, who has long been one of my favorite hockey players, has maybe made himself a little bit less so. One of the only things I care about that's stuck in my office that I haven't been in since March is a signed photo of him, which, you know, obviously I'm still happy to have, and it was nice to meet him, but he took out a full page ad in a New Hampshire newspaper endorsing Trump, which is his right, like, to have an opinion. I think he's a naturalized Canadian, although he lives in New Hampshire. But he was also like kind of going beyond that and talking, you know, the kind of very fine people stuff, which is really kind of stretching it a little further than I was able to go.
Way to read the room. And especially just as well as hockey has done with a lot of, you know, social issues and, I don't know, as quickly as it advanced in so many ways, it was just, how about just say nothing? That would have been, I would have been better off not knowing.
Much better. And it's like for him to get this far in his career without some kind of misstep, like one of the reasons I always have a softer spot for Orr over Gretzky. I mean, there's a number of reasons that I won't get into around the way the game was played and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure we can, you know, get me going on a rant about that. But he's avoided like gambling scandals. His wife, as far as I know, has not been, you know, ever indicted in any kind of criminal undertaking. Like he hasn't had terrible racist outbursts or like, you know, to get this far. And then like, I don't know, the last moment that this would even be relevant was disappointing. You know, he's entitled to his opinion, but I don't have to like it. So.
Yeah. And they're just, it was so unnecessary. What a really an unforced error. I mean,
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
a real shame. I went through some of that with Tom Brady over the last couple of years, you know, having the MAGA hat in his locker and stuff. And it just made me tamp down my expectations. It's with Belichick, you almost expect it. Cause I think, you know, he probably just admires the meanness of it all.
The Belichicity.
I think that's right in his wheelhouse. And he is the Prince of Darkness. Like we shouldn't expect him to be any other way, but yeah, with Orr, that's a bummer.
It was, but it's balanced out by some other things. So, Stephen Johns, who previously was a Trump supporter, has changed his mind and made some comments on Twitter about that, which I thought was pretty cool. One, to be able to change your mind and listen. And he said it was because it came about from listening, and to be public about it. Like people don't always do that, right? So that was pretty cool. People are more likely to
dig in or say
nothing. Seldom do. So I thought that was pretty cool. And while we're talking about the Dallas Stars, I think we talked over the summer about, you know, Tyler Seguin, you know, going to protests and, you know, kneeling with some other players when others weren't. And now he's reading books. tempting to make cheap jokes, but I think that's maybe we shouldn't at this point about him. But yeah, he's laid up. He had surgery at the hospital for special surgery. It turns out he's playing pretty injured through the playoffs. So he's at home. And since there's not a lot of new content being produced, like I said, he's been reduced to reading books. And now I just want to know what he's reading. But yeah. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I would love to know that reading list. There's all kinds of humorous guesses we can project on it. But yeah, I would love to know.
Yeah, I would too. And I think it's also nice to see his public persona, you know, kind of shifting over time, because he's certainly someone that's attracted a ton of media attention in various ways. And again, it's nice that, you know, people can change and we should let them. So I thought that was pretty cool. So the other thing that was going on that I thought was pretty cool that I wouldn't have expected to have seen is Bane Pettinger, who works for CAA Hockey, which is, you know, big powerhouse agency run by Pat Brisson. He came out and he had been in operations for Team Canada, you know, had worked with a lot of superstars, you know, in hockey, and he just wasn't comfortable not being himself or always worrying about who knew or who didn't or what version he was editing of himself. So The Athletic and others covered a really nice story. And Sidney Crosby, Nate McKinnon, Tyson Barrie, and Brian Burke all notably made comments in support. And that's pretty notable. McKinnon doesn't say a lot, but he's usually on the right side of stuff if he says anything. Crosby generally says nothing as much as possible, which, again, I understand for someone who's been in some scrutiny. But he actually made a statement, which he does not normally do.
And I liked his, too. I think wasn't his that, you know, this must be a big load off your mind just to be able to be yourself out in the world. And that's really neat to see.
Yeah. Like, it's a personal, you know, comment versus, of course, we stand behind blah, blah. The other person I thought was
through
really
his
nice.
Publicist. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, still through his publicist, but anyway, yeah. Who can blame him? Tyson Barrie too was super charming along with his girlfriend and you know, I think they're personal friends with Pettinger, and were really nice and really supportive about it. That was really nice to see. And then Brian Burke, whose son is the reason, you know, we have You Can Play. So yeah, if you see his public persona, you might not think that he's that guy, but he really is. And again, consistent in his support. And I think it's really notable too. Pat Brisson, you know, is a big deal in hockey. So he played in the QMJHL, and he currently reps Crosby, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Claude Giroux, John Tavares, Nathan McKinnon, like really a big deal, like serious hockey establishment, not some small time guy who's like, yeah, this guy's, you know, someone asked him, like, what if a player's family, you know, didn't, or prospect didn't want to work with you because of that? And he was like, then we don't need them.
Right. That's their problem. That's not our problem.
Yeah. So a big deal. And, you know, there's still a long way to go in a lot of places, but I'm still heartened to see some of these things change.
And quickly. I mean, quicker than things like this usually change.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing too, and that I didn't expect to see this year, Kendall Coyne Schofield has talked about, you know, wanting to be the first female GM, and, you know, I hope she gets there. And she is the first female on the coaching staff for the Chicago Blackhawks. So she's in player development and youth hockey development for them, which is great. I mean, it begs the question, like, she couldn't go on to a pro career because there's not a lot. I mean, she could, but there's not a lot there for women. But it's still a big deal, I think, that she landed that position, and really look forward to seeing what she does with it.
That is good to see. It's interesting to see if the NHL kind of does what the NBA did with the WNBA, where they just made it a decision that it doesn't matter if it makes money, and because it doesn't. I mean, but this is something that we should do, and we have the resources to do it, and we're going to. And hopefully, it would be nice to see the NHL really go that route and put their money where their mouth is. But this is definitely a positive step.
It really is. And in some ways, I think there's an advantage to, like, admitting women into the men's club, so to speak, versus, you know, throwing a check at the, you know, the nice girls over there. And we'll probably get into the whole women's hockey thing. There's a lot to unpack there. And I think it's even interesting, whether it's from, you know, you just said, like, about the league support, or even thinking about some of the players who's like have sisters who play, whether it's JT Compher, you know, his sister's playing at BU, really strong. You think about, like, Nolan Patrick, both his sisters play, and, like, where are they going to go? Like, they don't have the opportunities like their brothers do. But anyway, I think that's something we can, like, save for a future episode to get into. A little more. The other thing too is just like, what's going to happen with next season? Like, we don't really know. Bettman keeps talking about starting in January. It seems less and less and less logistically possible if you think about training camps and trying to have lead time and quarantine time. So we'll see what happens there. I don't know if there's anything, you know, exciting, interesting, appalling, or humorous that you want to talk about going on with baseball or football at the moment.
Well, the NBA is really, they went back and forth, and I know they were very nervous about revenue. I think we talked about that with the NHL. There were many clubs who really need fans in the stands,
yeah,
or at least TV money, one or the other or both. And they're trying to get going, really have their Christmas, you know, showcase, which is usually a big day for the NBA. That's, you know, when it kind of picks up and they have a bunch of rivalry games. So I think they're trying to start December 22nd. Which is, when you think of how recently the finals ended for the teams that went far in the playoffs, that's a short turnaround. And the NBA, differently from other sports, definitely values load management, and the players have a lot of power to rest. I mean, so I wouldn't be surprised, especially for look at the Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I would see them sitting out a bunch of games early on. Just, you know, we just finished. We won a title. We just finished. We're not going to hurt ourselves. This does take a physical toll.
Yeah.
And sure. The NFL, of all of them, we should have really figured they weren't going to be deterred by the coronavirus one bit. They're just plowing right through. I mean, guys, they have done their best. I mean, they can't play in a bubble, but right. They just, you know, when people are on the COVID list, they bring in some other players and they keep right on going. There have been a kind of a point of critical mass this last couple of weeks, especially with just the overall national spike in COVID cases. That they're like the Thanksgiving Day Steelers Ravens game was pushed back to Sunday, maybe pushed back further because they've shut down the Ravens practice facility. Their quarterback Lamar Jackson has tested positive. It's going to be tough to ram that game through. But the NFL has shown that they definitely value playing the games over anything related to player safety. So I think we know in some form or another they will get through the season.
That's not like that's a new development though. So yeah.
No, this is very much. You have always said that past behavior is
an indicator of future performance. Yep.
Yep. And this is exactly what they're doing. And as far as baseball goes, I don't know. What is a strange season. I think probably handled it the pandemic as poorly, or the start or the restart as poorly as they possibly could have.
Yeah.
So they'll continue to air petty labor grievances, and you know, who knows what kind of a season we have.
So we get that to look forward to, which is nice.
Yeah, which is nice.
Maybe I will end up watching Korean baseball after all.
You know, might have to if there's nothing else. But you know, if we need content, we already exhausted all. We already went through everything on YouTube of old playoff games from other sports. So yeah, we may have to.
I know I've watched some things games like multiple times at this point. I don't know. Terrible. So awesome. Yeah, and we can dig more into that and like various missteps and developments and like how could this ever possibly work as we keep going. I know you wanted to spend some time talking about Tommy Heinsohn, and I wore my Celtics hat for you.
I was very excited to see you've got some Celtic green on. Yeah, Tommy Heinsohn, Celtics legend as a player, coach, and broadcaster, passed away a couple weeks ago. Really, my first memories of watching Celtics games were with him as the as the analyst, sometimes paired with Bob Cousy, who was the opposite, you know, very straight-laced and serious. And Tommy Heinsohn, you know, there was never a foul that the Celtics had actually committed. They were always just jobbed. And it was great and, in retrospect, unbelievable that he would do national games on CBS, especially Celtics games, Celtics playoff games sometimes. And you'd get that, what a horrible call! Like, he just couldn't believe it, couldn't restrain himself. And some of the stories from his playing, coaching, and broadcasting life that came out after he'd passed really sum him up and really just made me laugh. So one of them is midway through one of the Celtics championship seasons with Bill Russell, Tom decided to quit smoking, I think, at the All-Star break. figured, you know, I'm going to get in better shape this year, you know, and they attributed that to winning an additional title, which I think is a sentence you would never hear thinking about any professional sport now. But the other one that I'd never heard until after he died was that when he was coaching, there was a game, because he was always getting ejected and teed up because he just was relentless on the refs and he would just lose his mind. And he got ejected. His assistant coach got ejected. And this was an era when I think he probably only had one assistant. And Red Auerbach, who had been retired, had to come out of the stands and finish coaching the game, which I think is hysterical.
That's awesome. And again, never happened now. Yeah.
Never happened now. No, there's so much more coaches. And the last one, and this was made the rounds on Twitter. This was after he'd passed, was the thing that was shared the most. There's a clip of him talking about Aaron Baines, who's a big Australian guy who played for the Celtics. He's bounced around since then. But during the broadcast, Tommy Heinsohn says, "I got a glimpse of him in the shower. And I'll tell you, Aaron Baines is as big as all Australia." And I thought, that was kind of the recurring thing on Twitter was, you know, does your broadcaster talk about your centers, Wang? Well, ours does. So, but in general, just a beloved part of the organization. And really, no one else from that era really stuck around a ton. Bill Russell kind of went and stayed away, with good reason. I mean, Boston was a very racist city to him. And, you know, he has a strange relationship with it and kind of went and lived as far as he could from there, lived in Seattle. Only comes back periodically, but Tommy Heinsohn was always there.
Yeah,
and it's just funny that he was still doing home games, you know, well into his 80s. So, he'll be missed.
Yeah, I was struck by the fact that he was able to, you know, he was part of that organization, and as you said, like through some different times and eras, but always relevant, and that it wasn't like some sort of honorary appointment that they let him hang around, that he was like, you know, the ex-player that won't get a real job, or like, oh, let's give him something in the front office. Like,
right,
contributing, relevant, respected, like engaged to the end.
Yes, love the way the game evolved, the speed of the game. You know, definitely was never one of those analysts to be like, well, back in my day, you know, we'd do it this way. And stayed relevant. And you're right, it was definitely a contributor the whole way through. I mean, you know, part of the whole Celtics organization for, you know, 65 years. I mean, that's just crazy.
That is insane. I will maybe blame him a little bit for, you know, what Jack Edwards now inflicts on us, but with the homerism. But that's, again, another topic.
That's true. Yeah, it's, we could, I think there could be a separate pod discussion on Jack Edwards. You have a few friends we could bring in on that. I think Mark Francis would come in. He'd be, he might be a guest. Just give him 10 minutes on Jack Edwards.
Yeah, we wouldn't need to talk at all. Just like,
no, it would just be pure bile. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's think about that too, whether it's guests or talking about our favorite and least favorite broadcasts.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's a lot of meat on the bone there.
For sure. For sure. Excellent. We'll talk about things that are bad and good. This is a new segment that we're going to try out, and it's bad, good movies. So I don't know if you want to start.
Sure. I mean, I figure we did our top five and we'll go, I mean, start at the bottom. So just definitionally, these are movies that are just not critically acclaimed, people like to crap on, but that have a special place for us that we just enjoy watching and rewatching. And that describes a lot of the movies we watch, but I think there are some in particular that people love to crap on that we rationally or irrationally really like. So in my top five, number five, I'm going with the 2005 Zack Snyder homoerotic historical opera Fever Dream 300, which it's had a heavy rotation on, you know, AMC basic cable over the years. It's just it's a delight. Plays itself totally straight. You've got Gerard Butler really going for it. I mean, throwing 100 miles an hour. And and it's also, I mean, it's a fun and exciting spectacle in contrast to some of the later Zack Snyder movies where they're just plodding and ponderous I thought one of the few times that a complete green screen movie really works.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you come and you just come out of it, you know, going, yes, Spartans. It's an entertaining one that I never get tired of watching, even though my friend Colin McComb does describe it as being beaten with an oily bag of dongs. But anyways, that's my five. What's your five?
Well, first of all, I have to commend your choice of 300 and Colin McComb's, you know, capsule review of it. That is a phenomenal selection. When I first started dating John, the movies that we would go and see, that was one of them that prompted him to turn to me and go, what are you, a 12-year-old boy? He's like, what? After I think I made him go see Sin City with me, too. Yeah, that's a great, great choice. I don't have a great memory for things, which is not to say I don't have an appetite for stuff that's not good. And I tend to get like fixated on stuff or really like obsessed. So my like bottom range ones are sort of more like collections of things that I got really focused on that all sort of blur together. And I know are not all critically equal. So I don't know if you remember how much I was into Humphrey Bogart when I was a kid.
Oh yeah. We went to the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. And that was a big deal to get your picture taken next to Bogie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I watched like every movie that I could, and this is when we didn't have cable, like every movie that would come on channel 38 or channel 56.
Yep.
And they are
the movie loft.
They're not all the African Queen or the Maltese Falcon, but I've seen all of them.
Wow. Yeah. So you've seen, there's the weird boxer one where he's and he plays a down on his luck journalist in a few of them. Wow. So do you now, is this a, what are your favorites out of that? Because they're probably not the African Queen. I bet you it's some of the darker ones. Well, I can't stand Hepburn's, nagging and accent in that, but
well, in anything, I actually don't like the African Queen. I think it's really boring, and this is not something that I would go back and watch because most of them were B movies. Like I can't even pick one out for you. I think he did one with Ida Lupino that's based on a Jim Thompson novel that's actually probably adequate. But most of them are like they just blur together in my mind. It's black and white. Yeah. Film noir, there's some kind of like femme fatale. And I've never really wanted to go back and watch them again because most of them aren't good. So
right.
I would just say it's a sort of amorphous mass of like black and white, you know, basic TV, like movies that I've never gone back to and probably won't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, that's good. No, I think, you know what? I vividly remember that period. You had, actually, I think it was Millionaire Picnic in Harvard Square where you could get
the Harvard Coop. You could get
had in your room. I think you had a bunch of frame pictures from some of the prints from like Key Largo and Maltese Falcon and a few of those.
Yeah. See, like I can remember some of the better ones, but like the less good ones, I don't even know. Right. And I could look them up now and I'm sure I've seen them, but I wouldn't remember. So yeah, that's my sort of like bottom five there. What's your number four?
Oh, you froze. Sorry, you froze up there on me, or I froze up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, so that's my bottom. I can edit it. So that was my sort of bottom five, is that amorphous mass of bad Humphrey Bogart or Humpty Go-Kart.
Humpty Go-Kart is, yeah, that's right. Oh. Well, I think he said that derisively because that's, he's jealous. So that's the film career that in his mind as an actor he could have had, you know, short, big head, skinny shoulders, chain smoking, that would have been a pop all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, could have been.
Okay. So for my fourth, I've got a classic that Dad took me to see. I think it's 1988, in an era where Dad would go see anything just to be air conditioned, which was a great era because he didn't care. I saw lots of really terrible movies then, but you knew I was going to have a Kurt Russell one on this list. And it's the just bizarre Big Trouble in Little China, that it's a strange mishmash. Don't know what they were trying to do, but it's very rewatchable. You've got young and inner prime Kim Cattrall. You got Kurt Russell yelling and bellowing with the best of them, and it's just a strange bonkers sort of martial arts adventure, but I heard an interview with Kurt Russell where he said he took it largely because he knew that he'd be playing it where he's the hero sort of, but he's a complete buffoon throughout the movie. And I think without Jack Burton, we probably don't have Star-Lord.
Cool. So,
all right. So what is your four?
So we've talked about Mad Max before and the Road Warrior. Beyond Thunderdome, it's really not good. It squanders so many cool things. You've got Tina Turner. She's perfectly adequate, I guess. You've got Cargo Cult, which could be super interesting. And again, it's squandered on a pack of terrible children. Two Men Enter, One Man Leaves is fine, I guess. I don't know. And I remember we had, seen The Road Warrior and Mad Max. I remember being incredibly excited for this to come out and bought the stupid picture disc screen, record or whatever.
Yeah, and you had the single for We Don't Need Another Hero.
Ugh, which is terrible.
Yeah.
That kind of music. I just wanted that, right? And it was terrible.
Right.
It was really bad. I really wanted to like it. I was super stoked about it. And it was just, it's bad and it hasn't gotten any better. Of course, I'm here sort of crapping on it. But like I said, I had that huge enthusiasm for it. I'll always have a soft spot for it because of how excited I was when it came out. And when it comes on, the costumes are fun. I don't know. I'll still watch it.
Well, it's made with more money than the other two. I do remember having high hopes. And just the fact, the first two seem like something, because we got into the first two a little late because of when they were made. And the fact that, they're making an in the theaters sequel to this that we can see.
Yeah.
And I can see, so sometimes it's when a movie comes into your life that it has a certain
exactly
appeal.
Like I know it's terrible, but I just remember how excited I was, and like I said, I'll still put it on and watch it, even though I'm the secondhand embarrassment throughout is just pervasive. And I've only seen the end because I'm usually like, all right, there's got to be something else.
Yes, yeah, I'm not gonna follow this through. Yeah,
no. All right, so yeah, that's number four.
All right, so my number three. And it's an obscure one, and it's just one that I've seen a lot on cable, and I probably have rented it a couple times with Dad. I think it's a 1988 movie called Digstown. So it's like The Sting, but way lower quality. So it's like The Sting, which instead of having Robert Redford, Paul Newman, and Robert Shaw, you get James Woods back before, when he was still just at least a credible character actor playing scumbags, which he did really well. Lou Gossett Jr. and a scenery chewing Bruce Dern. And it's the premise is Lou Gossett Jr. is a boxer that has to fight 12 guys in 24 hours. And they win some kind of bet. There's all kinds of side bets and double crosses and stuff. It's kind of a noir movie, and it's I don't know, it takes a lot of twists and turns that are very entertaining, and I think it probably was one that was just on basic cable a lot too, so I watched it, but that's made my list, and it's definitely not critically acclaimed, so it makes the good bad movie list.
Good enough. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it. I think what makes my next one is, and I'm sure people would argue with me about this, is actually bad, but what is it, Requiem for a Dream, is that incredibly depressing movie about drug addicts. And it's like, it's, the mood is terrific. It's too, like, it's too effective. Like, there's nothing redeeming about it. Like, I will watch some of it because the cinematography is really good. Like, the performances are really good. But, like, you're not rooting for anybody, which normally I'm kind of okay with. But it's just like, this is just painful. These people are a mess. Like, and nothing... That's the message. And I mean, I guess it's sort of realistic because that does happen to people, and addiction does take them.
Yeah.
So it's one of those that I said, like, I find it somewhat hypnotic to watch, and it was definitely very involving, but I never really want to watch it all the way through or again. And I can't think of a situation I'd really recommend anybody watch it, because it is so depressing.
It is. And it's, in terms of addiction movies, it's definitely gives Trainspotting more than a run for its money in terms of body horror and grossness, but Trainspotting also has like a humor and a kind of a tempo to it that it's different. That's which it makes it rewatchable in a way that Requiem for a Dream. I agree. Really well done, really effective, and I never want to think of it again.
No, and I would say like the second runner up in that category is I think it's Rush, and it's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yes.
And the Allman Brothers.
Sam Elliott. and Jason Patrick.
And Jason
Patrick. And one of the Allman Brothers.
Yes.
Is the villain.
Yeah. And this is a similar one. Great mood and like great portrayal of like sliding into something and being over your head. It's not actually that good. It's really melodramatic, but like a nice kind of moody piece.
Yeah. For its time, I think pretty good. That stands out. It's in exactly the same category.
Yeah. Cool. All right. What else
do you got? Okay. So at my number two, now this is one I went back and forth with Megan, my 11-year-old, who has been forced during this pandemic to watch all of these great movies. So there was there were a few second-tier Schwarzenegger movies that I liked, and I wavered between Predator and Commando. Now, Megan said, Commando can't be on the list because it's actually good. which made me laugh. In the end, and I love both of them, in the end I went with Commando. It's so silly. It's Schwarzenegger at the peak of his powers, you know, super roided up and oiled up and fired up. And it's a great, it's a movie trope that gets used many times. It's just, you know, your daughter's kidnapped, you got to go get her back, or just being on a revenge mission. He has lots of great one-liners. It's got one of the best sequences of gearing up for the big mission, where he literally drives a truck into an Army-Navy surplus store and just loads it up with gear. So good stuff. Reportedly, when Schwarzenegger was making it, when they were filming one of the early scenes where he's carrying an entire tree over his shoulder in one hand and carrying the chainsaw in the other, he's like, oh, this is the kind of movie this is. Okay, like that's set the tone, and he just... plays it totally straight. Nice. So just a very entertaining rewatch, and again had a heavy rotation on basic cable.
Yeah, I almost picked Predator too, because like the costume design's phenomenal, and the idea of like, you know, the hunting alien and, you know, being invisible is really cool, but it's actually unwatchable.
It's tough. Although it does have, I mean, the handshake that launched 1,000 memes, the manliest handshake ever between Carl Weathers and Schwarzenegger.
All right.
And also a good cast of character actors, that Sonny Lanham, who's just was a lunatic, I guess, he's the Indian tracker guy, had a bodyguard on the set to protect everyone else from him, because he was such a, like a, probably a drug addict and a mental, but just good stuff. And of course, you know, the whole confrontation at the end, that if it bleeds, we can kill it. So just, it's good stuff. You know, we had to have a Schwarzenegger one on there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So bad.
And one of those Terminator things. 1 and 2 are too good to be on the bad movie list.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. So speaking of something I know is bad, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that's not a good movie. Paul Reubens is a creepy vampire is kind of cool. Christy Swanson is probably more of an actual chippy, you know, or chirpy cheerleader than Sarah Michelle being on the TV show. But it's not good. It did, you know, launch that show, which in some ways really hasn't aged well, but, and we can talk about this at a later date. I think, you know, I earned my final college credit for my business degree by going to an academic conference on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah, like I'll still watch it, but it's not good.
And isn't Luke Perry is in that too, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. It's actually surprising that it launched the series, because it's series is better. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do remember your Buffy phase, and that you you did go to the convention or the conference. That's just perfect.
Yeah, listen, got my last elective credits.
Yeah. Well, they say write what you know.
So yeah, Buffy, the movie. All right, what else you got?
All right, so my number one, and this is really the movie that launched the idea for this list, in my mind, we just watched it for Up North VHS Theater. I finally got Megan to watch it. She did not share my enthusiasm for it. It's a Tony Scott buddy comedy, buddy action comedy from 1990, The Last Boy Scout. So Bruce Willis in it plays down on his luck private eye Joe Hallenbeck, who is, if you take his character John McClane from the Die Hard movies and just make him way lower functioning, drunker, meaner, and just, you know, John McClane is a family man. He's fighting to get back his estranged wife and, you know, has kids and everything. You know, Joe Hollenbeck's character, he's sleeping in his car. He's a degenerate alcoholic. His teenage daughter can't stand him. You know, his wife is having an affair with his private eye partner. You're just off and running. He grimaces, and you know, the line from the beginning that I love is, you know, he gets the call for the job that will eventually be the plot of the movie, and it's, you know, what are you doing? Well, thinking about smoking some cigarettes. It's like, well, could you postpone that? I don't know. These are pretty good cigarettes. That's the kind of movie you're in for. I think Damon Wayans actually does really well. It's a more fun kind of, you know, odd couple buddy cop movie than 48 Hours ever was. And I think it's actually aged better. It's got some great kind of predictive stuff about NFL ownership and, you know, how little they care about player safety. There's a whole subplot with that. So I always found it really entertaining. It's one that doesn't get played a lot and didn't do particularly well at the box office. Even though I think Tony Scott has turned in a lot of really reliable action movies. It's one that I really like. And when I found the VHS copy of it at a flea market up north, I thought, I can't wait. It was a few years before I could let Megan watch it. Cause it's, you know, it's a 90s comedy. Of course it's got a strip club scene. And of course it's got, you know, a lot of bad language in it. So she eventually did watch it, did not share my enthusiasm, but it has not tempered my enthusiasm for The Last Boy Scout.
I can see that. I don't think I've ever seen it. I'll have to check it out.
You're in for a treat.
Speaking of treats, I went and John was out fishing today, so he's sleeping. I went and woke him up a little while ago to run through this list with him. And I asked him, like, what's like the worst thing that I like? And he immediately, like out of a stupor, was like, Cabin Boy. He's like, it's that movie Cabin Boy.
And I was like, talk about movies that launched this list. That is one of them. And it's a polarizing one too. People either think
that's
it's hilarious.
And he was like, whatever, tell yourself whatever you need to.
So he's taking the angle on it that Dad would have. Dad said this about Madonna, that when she was called controversial, he goes, that implies there are differing opinions on her. But it is polarizing. I think it's hilarious. I like Chris Elliott. I think he's, I think his kind of self-deprecating gross out humor is funny. I think he's made a good career off of it, and I think it's a funny rewatch. It's just one of those things, kind of like Dumb and Dumber, that you laugh in spite of yourself, and it's just it stands up. And it's a shame it doesn't actually get more play, because I think you know, I think it would get some good laughs. You know what, I'm gonna have to show that for Megan. I think She'll get you know, some same cheap laughs too.
Yeah, the humor's pitched right about her age level, so that should work out well. I watched it, like, even trying to watch it with John, I was like, we can put something else on, because he was just like, ugh. And like, yeah. I was like, you know, I did used to smoke a lot of weed. It did bring me back for sure. Yep. To when I thought this was like the height of hilarity.
Right.
And I'll always have an affection for it for that. Like, it's just, there's nothing else like it. It is so stupid. What kind of plot is that? Like, that's what you decided to go with? Like, out of all the things you could have done, that was like the genre and the setting. Okay, why not? Sure.
It's amazing it got greenlit. Like, can you picture the pitch meeting for this? I think these are ones where we just have to remember that there was a lot of cocaine in Hollywood then. And you could if you were willing to sell it, you could talk up a lot of movie ideas, and thank goodness they did.
Yeah. What would the world be like?
We wouldn't have Cabin Boy. That's very true.
Be a dimmer place for sure.
it would be.
Excellent. Well, now that we've like eroded any kind of credibility in terms of our opinion, we might have ever had. But I think we'll come up with some stuff to talk about next time.
I think so. We'll be coming up on the holidays, so it's time to start thinking about your favorite Christmas movies, whether you want to go literal or non-literal, or you know, movies that happen to have Christmas in it. I know it's been a hot topic lately, whether Die Hard is one that we'll see if it makes my list, and if I have to defend whether it is a Christmas movie.
Like, it's not going to make your list. And by the way, I was doing some research and already found a paper that we can cite in our show notes about why it is a Christmas movie.
So. Ah, perfect. All right. So we've already got some scholarly research from the research department. Perfect.